A diagnosis of breast cancer can cause a life-changing ripple effect of impact, affecting those we love the most and those upon whom we lean for comfort and strength in the most challenging of times. My name is Aisling Hurley and I'm the CEO of Breast Cancer Ireland, and you're listening to More Than a Lump, a podcast that talks openly and honestly to a selection of guests about their very personal connection to breast cancer, be it through their career choice, their own first-hand experience of the disease, or through sharing the experience of close family members. Paula McLean was getting ready for a family wedding where her three little girls were flower girls one summer evening in July. She was applying tan to her arm and chest area when she felt a lump. In today's podcast, Paula shares her story of being diagnosed with stage 2 invasive breast cancer at the age of just 42. She talks about what made her get the lump checked in the weeks after the wedding, her treatment journey, and why the emotional scars remain with her to this day, nearly 11 years later. Paula shares a really honest reflection on the trauma of a breast cancer diagnosis, the worries, the anxieties it brings, even years later. She also chats to me about her love of fashion, running, and being part of a community of women who have travelled the same road as she has helped her, but most importantly today, Paula talks to me about how, as a mother of three little girls who are fast growing up to be fabulous young women, she's passionate about continued investment into breast cancer research. She wants to protect girls like her daughters, and indeed future generations of Irish women, to make sure they survive and thrive, despite what life throws at them. Paula, you're very welcome to More Than a Lump.
Thanks, Aisling. It's good to see you.
As always, you look so glamorous and stylish.
Thank you. Thank
you're looking fabulous. It's lovely to see you again in person after, you know, these years, the last 2 years. Absolutely. Take us back to the beginning and the night before that family wedding when you noticed something was amiss.
Yeah. That was 2011, Aisling. I'll never forget it. We were going to a family wedding, all very exciting. My three girls were flower girls. And they were tiny. They were 6, 4, and 2. And there was so much, you know, fun and looking forward to it. And I was really busy. Life before that was pretty good. Pretty busy all around, as you can imagine, three young girls. But so we went on down to the wedding. And so we had a family lunch that day. And that evening, it was a very glamorous wedding, actually. And so I was kind of looking, going, I better put on a little bit more tan here and, you know, for the next day. So, and I hadn't had time to put it on before that, to be honest. So the girls were in bed in the room and I was putting on tan. And I was wearing kind of an off-the-shoulder dress. It was a black tie wedding. And I found what I felt like an unusual lump in my left breast. And I kept touching it and thinking, gosh, I really didn't feel that before. And then I thought, well, maybe I hadn't really put tan on in ages, so maybe I wouldn't have felt it before. And so I went and carried on and got stuff ready in the room. And then Ronan came back up, my husband, that about an hour later. He'd been downstairs with his brothers having kind of a drink the night before the wedding. And I just said to him, I found what I think is a lump. And immediately, natural thing to do, he said, oh, no, I think that's fine. You know, your mum doesn't have breast cancer, and which is a statistic I learned after that is not a statistic, because it's only 10% of breast cancer is hereditary. But I didn't know that then. And that kind of reassured me a little bit. And I kind of thought, yeah, I'm fine. You know, I'm feeling great. I'm healthy. I'm fine. We had a beautiful day the next day. And we were coming back up in the car. It was the wedding being in Waterford, and it was niggling in my mind a little bit, but I dismissed it, Aisling, because I genuinely thought I was too young. I genuinely wasn't educated enough in breast cancer and the age profile that it can affect. And I thought, if my mom is perfectly fine, well then I must be fine. And so I came back up, and it was the end of school year, and it was busy with the girls going, you know, they were finishing up school, and there was dress up days and party days and the whole lot. But honestly, it was in the back of my mind. And I remember thinking, was it hormonal? And I would wait for a week or two and feel again and see, was it still there? And it was very much still there. And it was quite hard, and it felt unusual. And I started to really think about it, but I didn't rush to go to my GP for the first few weeks, because I genuinely thought that I was much too young. to get breast cancer.
Mm. And I remember you saying all those years ago when we met that it was an interesting article. You were taking up the Sunday papers, about to put them in the bin, and you stopped and saw an article that Trina McCarthy had written about her sister, Trish.
Yeah, that is what happened. And I've since wrote to her because I really think that article saved my life, which is where my passion came from, talking about my story. So it was a Sunday when we got all the papers in. It was a beautiful day. And I was flicking through the papers and looking through them. And it was in the Life magazine. It was a picture of her beautiful sister, Trisha, who had sadly passed away from breast cancer when she was very, very young, in her kind of late 20s. And I took my breath away. I remember reading it and going, oh my goodness. And again, put my hand to my chest to feel, was that lump thing still there? And it was, but I just still dismissed it, Aisling. And it was actually the next morning. I dropped the kids to school. I was doing the kitchen and putting the stuff in recycling. And I went to put the papers in and I just looked at it and I said, no, there's something not right here. And I have to get this checked. And I rang my GP straight away. And I got an appointment for the next morning, that was on the Tuesday morning. And I went in to my GP, and I remember sitting there as well for a couple of moments and thinking, I'm wasting their time. You know, but anyway, I sat there. I went into my gorgeous doctor and I told my story, and then he checked my breast. And I can't say I could read him. I was trying to read him to see what he thought, but I'm definitely glass half full person. I kept thinking, this is absolutely fine. But he basically sent me to Vincent's for an appointment pretty quickly, a couple of days later. And I went to see the lovely Enda McDermott. And things happened very quickly then. And all the time, I remember saying to my mom and my husband, you know, what do you think? Is it okay? And they said, I think it's okay, but I kind of thought it wasn't. So I went to see Dr. McDermott, and then as anybody who's been through diagnosis, they pretty much know pretty quickly. Looking back now, I was definitely knew that he thought it wasn't fine. I had a mammogram, I had a biopsy, and I was asked to come back in a couple of days later with my husband or somebody close to me. And those 2 days were excruciatingly difficult. I think your life flashes in front of you. I just knew it was not going to be good news. And I, you know, my three little girls, the word cancer was just so frightening to think what that could be. And so we went in, myself and Ronan, that day, and I called it the not good news room. We paced up and down Vincent's corridor, couldn't sit down, couldn't relax, just. And I, when we went in to sit down in front of Enda and Claire, the breast cancer nurse, I think I actually switched off when I heard the word cancer. And it was a very frightening time. I think I'm a very brave person and I'm able to cope with a lot of things in my life. But at that stage, it was about my kids. And all I kept thinking about was, oh my God, what is this going to mean? And I, it was a huge fear. And things after that got very fast. And I had a small enough tumour, Aisling, but it had kind of started to spread across my left breast. So it, what they call a kind of calcifications, they were coming in to head off and form other little lumps. I was exceptionally lucky to catch it early, and it had not spread to my lymph nodes. Mm-hmm. But I had to have a mastectomy because they couldn't take the chance with the calcifications going across my breast that it was, you know, mm-hmm. it was the best thing to do. I wasn't given a choice, actually.
Yeah. Can I ask you, just even on that point, because you say you went then down the mastectomy route, You were one of the very first people I spoke to who had sent that your biopsy or had been sent away for the oncotype testing.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes. So this is something my oncologist and Dr. McDermott spoke to me about, which I, so years ago, Aisling, you know, everybody who, as you know, who had breast cancer had the same treatment, and breast cancer was treated in a very similar way. Not anymore. With research, it's, you know, everybody's breast cancer is completely different. And because it hadn't spread to my lymph nodes at the time, they felt there was a possibility I didn't require chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. And in the States, there was a test called the OncoDX test. It wasn't in Ireland at the time. And we had to pay for it, for the tumour to be sent over. And we made the kind of executive call, myself and my husband, to say, look, it's something we really would like to do. So they recommended we did it. So I was one of the first patients to have done it at the time, which was 11 years ago. Currently, it's available now, which is incredible and amazing. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, down to research and everything. So it was sent off and I waited for a few weeks to see what came back. When you have a mastectomy first, you also and you have to wait for the skin to heal to do any kind of treatment anyway. Mm-hmm. So I was off about really kind of hoping that maybe it would come back. It was funny, my mom at the time was hoping that I would have to do chemotherapy because she would have had this old fashioned fear that, like, you know, it's the best thing to do and to do it. But that's changed now, and, mm-hmm. and people have very successful outcomes without chemotherapy. Unfortunately for me, I got a call from my oncologist and she asked me to come in. And again, I just knew the whole thing now at this stage. I was pro. And she said, unfortunately, it had come back with, it's able to tell you a lot of details, some detail you probably don't really want to know, but it's actually an incredible thing to have done, because it basically said that my cancer was very aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I was quite young. And that reoccurrence without chemotherapy was a high possibility. Mm-hmm. So it was really, it wasn't even something that we had to discuss. Mm-hmm. I was asked, and that was on Friday, and I started chemotherapy on the Monday morning. I dropped my middle daughter, Maggie, who was starting junior infants, to school for first day school, and went on up to Vincent's to start chemotherapy. So that was a tough old day. Mm, but it was, got through it.
Mm-hmm. And talk to me now about tamoxifen, because I know you were initially on tamoxifen, and then there's recently, well, in the last 3 to 4 years, I suppose, there is this new thinking that you would have stayed on tamoxifen for 5 years. Now they're saying, from research point of view, you should stay on for 10 years.
Yes, and I was actually that, again, that patient, actually, because I was basically did my 5 years, and I was very lucky. I did tolerate it well. I had a couple of little things over those few years that were difficult health-wise, but really I was quite lucky and I did tolerate it. And then with my oncologist and conversations back and forth, she felt that I was a candidate based on, I suppose, my age and the aggressiveness of the cancer initially, that I would stay on it for 10 years. So I was one of the first people to do that. And I managed to do 8, Aisling, of it, because I think with getting older and with menopause and different things happen, I started to have a few complications with it a little bit. And I basically ended up then coming off it last year and having a hysterectomy with ovary removal, because my estrogen levels were actually still quite high. Mm. And it was the safest thing for me to do. Mm-hmm. But it is an incredible drug. I firmly believe it is, you know, I'm here today because of it. And it is very, very tolerable. I didn't really have any side effects at all for the first like 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And again, that is, I mean, it's incredible. It's down to research. I mean, years ago, you didn't have something like this. You know, like my mom's very good friend in her 30s passed away from breast cancer. But she had an estrogen-driven breast cancer, but there wasn't, tamoxifen hadn't been researched. Mm-hmm. It wasn't on the market. Yeah. So yeah, it's an incredible drug. Mm-hmm. It really is. Mm-hmm. And I had a fear coming off it.
Yes, of course.
And because it was kind of my safety net, and I really felt, and I took it religiously at the same time every day. But I did well. I did mm-hmm. my 8 years, so mm-hmm. I feel that I've ticked my box there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I suppose for me, looking at you and knowing you this length of these all these years, fashion and running were the key things that, if you like, got you through this awful time in your life.
Yeah. So I remember actually halfway through chemotherapy, walking down Sandyman Strand and looking at this gorgeous girl who I had met through a friend who had been through breast cancer, who had been incredibly kind to me during my diagnosis. She was the first person that I'd spoke to, and she was running, and I said to Ronan, I'm going to start running. And so I literally, 6 weeks after chemotherapy, I'd never run in my life before. I used to look at people running going, running people, and I am a runner, Aisling. So I was driving down past Dundrum to pick up the girls, and on the side of the goat bar there was this huge big sign for the Great Pink Run. And I pulled up in the traffic and I looked to the right and I said, and all these sea of pink, and I said, I'm going to do that. So I did. And I basically went to the couch to 5K to work myself to go and do that first run ever. And a couple of my pals, I roped them into doing it with me. And I did it, and I have done it every year since. And I love it. It was a line in the sand. It was before and after breast cancer. It was a personal thing. It made me feel healthier. It made me feel stronger. But that, the pink run every year, as you know, it is incredibly emotional, but incredibly powerful. All these incredible people coming together to, you know, to raise funds for this incredible cause that affects so many people. Mm-hmm. I have so many friends who have been through it, and I absolutely love it. I love it. And I'm running still, running. People, like, you know, around where I live and stuff, kind of go, I saw you running, I saw you running. So, like, anyway, I've been known to be called Forrest Gump the off time. So,
but it is. I mean, the Great Pink Run, I always stand back on the days when it was a physical event up to 2019 and admire the thousands that come out, and they're in their droves to, like, men, women, and children, walk it, run it, jog it, whatever they want to do, because they know, unfortunately, everybody knows somebody who's been affected.
Yeah.
And thankfully, in 2022, I never thought I'd be able to say it again, but we're going to have a physical event again.
Oh, super.
So we'll be bringing everybody into the park in the middle of October, which is fantastic. And we'll be offering it in a virtual environment for those that can't make it. But it is about togetherness. It is about that solidarity within that kind of pink tribe.
And my girls have done it with me. So they have, they were very young when I was diagnosed, but they're young teenagers now, and they have... firstly, my eldest did it with me, and then my middle daughter Maggie did it, and then Lizzie did it. So we've all done it together, and then we've done it in different ones. So they will do it again with me this time.
Absolutely.
And I love that, and that was really important for me and for them. And they see so many people who've been through it, and for them, then it isn't such a frightening thing, which is what breast cancer is. But when people come together, it's very strong.
It's very strong.
Very strong.
And can I just ask you, even going back to your diagnosis, your kids were very, very young. I mean, I know Sally was, what, six?
Six.
So how did you, or when did you tell them, well, mommy is sick, mommy's actually, you know, how did you broach it with them?
It was a difficult one. They were very young at the time, and I thought that I might not say anything to them, but I read a few things, and I thought that the thing with children, I thought the best thing to do is to be honest and in a gentle way. And when they were very young, I spoke to them about, you know, there are good cells and bad cells, and sometimes the baddie cells can get into your body, but they have this incredible medicine. But unfortunately, the medicine can be a bit silly, and it doesn't know which cells are good and bad. And so that's why you can lose your hair, because that was the most difficult part. I think you could nearly have hidden it if you hadn't lost your hair, because I did wear a wig a lot of times out, but then the wig can get uncomfortable, and I didn't wear my wig in the house. But kids are extremely resilient. I don't think they noticed half the time, except, I mean, there was a couple of jokes. My daughter, one of the days outside school, you know, my middle daughter Maggie was telling her friends that her mum had no hair and thought that was just so cool, and then asked me outside the school to take my wig off and show all her friends, and I said, look, I'll do that later, you know. So kids were incredible. And actually, an interesting part of this story, because the kids have grown up, and they know that I've been very involved in breast cancer and in breast cancer research, and they know that I've been fundraising, and so they see this part of it. But we were going to school a couple of years ago, And there was a sign for something, can't remember particularly what it was. And my eldest at the time, the car, would have been quite young still, the early teenager. She just said, Mum, I didn't actually know that people can actually die from breast cancer. And so that was a whole different conversation. Mm-hmm. And that was... it was incredible, as you know, becoming a, if she's an older child now, becoming an older teenager, to actually want to understand it and to not have a fear around talking about it. And I think that's a very powerful thing for teenagers and up and coming young 20-year-olds to actually understand their bodies and to be empowered and to be actually completely aware of not finding something, but of anything that is different or changes. And so... But yes, they've got involved with lots of stuff with me over the years, and they have loved it, and they understand it now. Mm-hmm. And they I have unfortunately lost a couple of pals to this dreadful disease, and they have known them. Mm-hmm. And so it's they would be aware, and they would speak openly and honestly about mm-hmm. it, which is, I think, really positive thing, young, strong women coming in to the world in
absolutely
time.
Absolutely. And Paula, you've also spoken to me on several occasions about the sort of the loneliness and I suppose the emotional scars of the diagnosis and the fear that is constantly with you.
Yeah, I mean, so I think the first couple of years after a diagnosis is really difficult, Aisling, for people. And anybody out there knows this. I think with the best wishes in the world, everybody around who loves you wills you well and want to believe that it's over and you're better. And you are, and you are finished your treatment and you are gone to the next stage. But there's a huge fear for those few years afterwards that it comes back. Mm-hmm. And... the reality of it is that you know it can come back, and that's a very difficult place to be, because you get on with your life and you're happy and you're grateful, and you know your family, your friends are all there for you, and somewhere along the way you stop talking about it because life moves on, and that's what happens, and that can be quite a lonely a place to be, because that fear is still there, and it gets easier as time goes on. It absolutely does, but I don't honestly think it ever goes away. Mm. I don't think that I will ever take for granted anything in terms of my health anymore. I will be very on top of it. I will be very aware of everything. I'm very, very grateful for how I feel and how healthy I am, and it's really important to me. But it's really important to me to be, you know, on top of it and to mind myself, and which I do. And but yeah, it is a difficult thing to go through. And you get huge solace in speaking to people who are your friends who have been through it, and that is incredible. It might just be a smile, or it might just be a nod, but we know like the pain that we have been through. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a tough old time, and I think my advice to people to be actually is to still talk about it as much as you can. Mm-hmm. It's a huge impact on your life, without
absolutely
a question of a
and
doubt.
You talk about impact, and you have played an enormous role on behalf of Breast Cancer Ireland in all the years that you have been an ambassador with us, whether it is coming and speaking at some of our functions and, you know, telling your story to people has certainly resonated with so many women and indeed men, because as we know, you know, while it's one in nine women are diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, one in 1,000 men, we still do have a number of cases of men. But it is just important about giving it a voice, and a voice in a non-threatening, worrying way. But yet the importance of, you spoke earlier about knowing you're normal. It is so important, and especially with young girls. And we do a complimentary program throughout all the regions in Ireland where we visit schools, you know, TY especially, we started on the whole importance of understanding good breast health. And that's really key. My whole philosophy behind it is, if you know you're normal today, should you spot an abnormality, it'll be detected early. And as you say, early detection, it does save lives.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, it's actually, it goes without question. I'm so passionate about it, Aisling, because, and I think the TY programme is incredible, because I've heard unbelievable, really good feedback from it, and people going back, talking to their mothers, mothers talking to friends and aunts. And I mean, you would be surprised how many people actually don't even know how to check. And I was that person when I was diagnosed. I hadn't checked my breast before that. I hadn't done it before because I felt I was too young. And that is the importance, I think, in empowering young women, is it's not that you're looking to find something that is wrong. If you know your body inside out, and if you pick something up, early detection is crucial, because the longer you wait to get something looked at, then the more difficult it is, the more difficult an outcome it is, the more difficult treatment is. And I think it's really an important and powerful part of women going forward. And I would hope that in the next, 10, 20 years, that it's really a normal thing for people to do, to like own your body, to be empowered to actually like be completely aware if something is not right within your body. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's really important.
You just can take my job, because you say exactly what I say to everybody else, is know your own body, empower yourself to be more breast aware. Don't wait for, and especially when I talk to so many women, don't wait for a breast check at the age of 50 to give you a free mammogram. You know what's normal today. If you spot something, you go to your GP.
Yeah.
You're going to get seen by the specialist breast centres. And importantly, I also say, and I love the whole transition year programme, because I call them my social ambassadors, you know, that they go home. While they may not necessarily check themselves initially, they certainly go home and talk to mom, to granny, to auntie, to cousins, etc. And that is what it's all about. You know, I tell people, download our free app called Breast Aware, because it is knowing the 8 signs and symptoms, which after research we did recently in October 2021, we know that women don't understand, and hence the name for our podcast, More Than a Lump. There are 8 signs and symptoms. A lump is just one.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, when I look back at my beginning of my story and why I went to the GP, that is somebody telling their story. And it's somebody, and so there was some part of me that had actually heard about it, that had knew that this wasn't right. And then, because it was a lump. And then when I read this story in the Life magazine about like Trina's sister, I knew that I had to go about it. So the more knowledge, the more that people are out there, then people will go and get checked. Mm-hmm. And that is a really powerful thing. I have 3 young girls coming up into the world, Aisling, and I never want them to go through this. I mean, that is something that I've always said, and you know that. Yeah. I mean, the pain in my parents' eyes to see what I went through, I will never forget that. And I think that it has to be a time in the world when there are young women that it is so normal to check, to know what's right, to know what's not right, and to go and get it looked at. Mm-hmm. And the treatment is, it's very simple then, and then like get on with your lives. Mm-hmm. That would be a wish and a dream for me, to that, you know, that's where we would be when my young girls are young women.
Mm-hmm. And we are certainly getting there. 10 years ago, we were fighting the fight of awareness and education, and our research was slower. Now we have definitely speeded up our research discovery. We're into clinical trials straight away. We have so many new clinical trial drugs out there. We're doing a lot more in the clinical trial world, because we need to transform what we're finding in lab settings into new drug therapies for people that are diagnosed. We're looking at, you know, survival rates are certainly improving. More importantly, our mortality is dropping. Mortality rates are dropping. So we are slowly but surely, I'm getting to the point where I'm realizing what Breast Cancer Ireland's mission is, which is about transforming this disease into a long-term treatable illness that can be maintained. So Paula McLean, thank you so much, as always, for everything you do for Breast Cancer Ireland and for sharing your story today.
Thanks, Aisling.
The information in this podcast is based on the personal stories of those we have chatted to. If you are concerned in any way, please contact your GP immediately, or you can contact us at breastcancerireland.com.